It's 4 hours Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Ray Kugel reporting. Diplomatic pressure for peace in Ukraine. U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry calling for an immediate commitment to a ceasefire to end the violence in Ukraine. VOA's Carla Babb reports.
Secretary of State John Kerry showed his support for the Ukrainian government in Kiev Thursday, calling for a peaceful solution through diplomacy, but adding there cannot be what he called a one-sided peace.
Russia and the separatists are seizing more territory, terrorizing more citizens, and refusing to participate in serious negotiations. Let there be no doubt about who is blocking the prospect of peace here. They continue to refuse Ukraine the control of its own border. Its own border.
French President François Hollande and German President Angela Merkel were in Kiev to present a ceasefire plan. Carla Babb, VOA News, Brussels.
French President Hollande and Germany's Chancellor Merkel will meet with Russian President Vladimir Putin in Moscow today to discuss their plan. Jordanian warplanes launched airstrikes against Islamic State targets on Thursday after King Abdullah vowed an earth-shaking response to the gruesome murder of a Jordanian pilot who was captured in Syria in December. No information was given on the targets of Jordan's military airstrikes. But Foreign Minister Nasser Judeh told CNN television that this is just the start of Jordan's retaliation. Representatives of two militias fighting in the Central African Republic have signed an unconditional ceasefire at peace talks in the Kenyan capital, Nairobi. However, it is not clear how legitimate the talks are. Central African Republic President Catherine Samba Panza's government did not participate. This is VOA News. Cameroon says at least 91 civilians have been killed by Boko Haram since the Nigerian militants invaded Cameroonian villages on Wednesday. The defense minister told VOA that 6 Cameroonian soldiers and 13 Chadian soldiers also died in clashes with a gunman in and around the border town of Fotokol. Chad and Cameroon have deployed troops to fight Boko Haram. The Yemen branch of al-Qaeda says one of its top commanders, Harit al-Nadari, was killed along with 3 other militants in a U.S. airstrike in the country's south. Nadari was most recently seen on video praising last month's deadly attack on France's Charlie Hebdo newspaper. Pakistan's prime minister is harshly critical of India for using what he calls delaying tactics to resolve the long-running territorial dispute over Kashmir. Ayaz Ghul has more.
Pakistan officially observes the so-called Kashmir Day every year on the 5th of February to pledge its political, moral, and diplomatic support for separatist groups fighting Indian rule in the divided Himalayan region. In his message on this year's annual day, Pakistani Prime Minister Nawaz Sharif accused Indian security forces of committing human rights violations in Kashmir, a predominantly Muslim region. Later, Mr. Sharif traveled to the capital of Pakistani Kashmir to address the region's legislature. Mr. Sharif again described Kashmir as Pakistan's jugular vein. Ayaz Gulf, Islamabad.
The German and Greek finance ministers made no progress in their Berlin talks Thursday towards settling the demand from the new Greek government to restructure the country's bailouts. German finance minister Wolfgang Schäuble says that he and Yanis Varoufakis agreed to disagree about Greece's call to end strict austerity measures. But the Greek finance minister said otherwise.
We didn't reach an agreement. It was never on the cards that we would. We didn't even agree to disagree from where I'm standing. From where I'm standing, we agreed to enter into deliberations as partners with a joint orientation towards a European solution for European problems.
The death toll from the crash of a passenger plane in Taiwan rose to 32 Thursday as search and rescue operations continued for 11 people still missing. The twin-engine TransAsia plane went down moments after takeoff from Taipei's Songshan Airport Wednesday, bound for Taiwan's outlying Kinmen Islands. The plane's left wing clipped an elevated highway and a taxicab before crashing into the Chelung River. The plane's flight data and cockpit voice recorder have been recovered, and they are under examination to find out the cause of the crash. I'm Ray Kugel in Washington.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Friday, February 6th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. African leaders seek to address increased Boko Haram violence.
All the nations, including the African Union, have decided to come together to curb this issue, to address this issue, and possibly to get rid of Boko Haram.
Issa Chiroma Bakari is Cameroon's information minister. Nigeria's Rimini Chibok girls get a new life at the university. The World Health Organization says the window for controlling the Ebola outbreak is narrowing. And a new report calls on the United States to impose wide-ranging sanctions on the Gambia for 15 years of human rights abuses.
By releasing the report now, when we did, we're really urging the United States as well as the United Nations and the African Union to be more proactively involved in the clearly deteriorating human rights situation, which has been, taking place, as you mentioned, over the past two decades.
Jeff Smith is Africa specialist at the Robert F. Kennedy Center for Justice and Human Rights, and we'll tell you why the South Sudan government is against the release of the African Union Commission of Inquiry on the Civil War. Those stories plus Mark Oldman's Sports and our Listener of the Day and Black History Month are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Cameroon's information minister says the ongoing military offensive against the Nigeria-based Islamist group Boko Haram is an indication of the commitment of African heads of state to end the violence by the group. Nigeria, Chad, and Cameroonian troops have launched a joint military operation against Boko Haram militants. Issa Chiroma Bakari tells reporter Peter Clotty that countries involved in the military action have been sharing intelligence as part of an effort to protect their citizens.
All the five nations on the front line have decided after the meeting which took place in Niamey, Niger, then the next meeting took place in Addis Ababa. All the nations, including the African Union, which gave the support to the five countries of the front line. Let us say that the continent as a whole has decided to come together to curb this issue, to address this issue, and possibly to get rid of Boko Haram, which is jeopardizing, undermining the life of people, our economy, our way of living. Indeed, to do it, they need to organize themselves to bring together their means. I mean intelligence, military, hardware, all necessary means have to be brought together in order to address this issue.
What necessitated this latest round of joint military action against this Boko Haram militants? Because they've been causing havoc for some time now. Sometimes they attack Cameroon, attack Nigeria, attack Chad, Niger, and all these. What prompted this latest round of joint effort to crush them?
It is easy to understand. What does the state have understood and noticed that by acting alone, by protecting your own frontier or your own border alone, it is impossible to address the issue. It is impossible. The reason why they have to come together to share intelligence, to bring together their means, to get the assistance of the international community. Let me remind you that during the meeting which took place in Paris under the leadership of François Hollande, the great nation in the world, including the United States of America, Great Britain, France, European Union, China, Canada, and Germany, all those states have decided to give us the necessary helpful hand in order to address the issue. But to get them involved in the process, they need to have the blessing of the Security Council.
Now, how is intelligence sharing? Because would you say the intelligence sharing between these countries, these five main nations at the frontier of this fight, necessitated this latest round of military offensive against Boko Haram?
Boko Haram, they have their own program. They want to terrorize. They want to slaughter people. They want to kill. They want just to play havoc all over the area. We know their program. They have nothing else in the agenda. But all the states involved in this process, they understood that by fighting alone, by trying to protect your border, it is impossible.
Issa Chiroma Bakari is Cameroon's information minister. He spoke with reporter Peter Clotty from the capital, Yaoundé. after Boko Haram burned down their school and kidnapped over 200 of their classmates. The remaining schoolgirls in the Nigerian town of Chibok had few options for education. Then the American University of Nigeria stepped in. Chris Stein reports for VOA from Yola in Nigeria.
Some hid, some jumped from the beds of trucks, and others simply ran. While 57 girls managed to escape from Boko Haram insurgents when they raided the Borno State town of Chibok last April, 219 of their classmates are still missing. They haven't been heard from since. The escapees from the raid sat idle in Chibok after the attack, their school torched by the insurgents, who have targeted educational institutions in their campaign to impose strict Sharia law in northern Nigeria. Then Margie Enzine, president of the American University of Nigeria in Yola, was approached by one of her security guards whose relative escaped captivity. Enzine knew she had to help. 21 of the girls are now studying at the university in Yola, the capital of neighboring Adamawa State. They're completing a program that will allow them to finish their secondary school studies and, if they choose, go on to enroll in the university, Enzine says.
That really is the university's mission, to be a development university and try to improve the community and region around us. It's why we took them in and are giving scholarships to them, because they're probably among the most vulnerable young people in our region. They've been through a horrible experience. And in spite of that experience, perhaps because of it, they're more determined than almost any student I've ever worked with.
The kidnapping of the girls focused worldwide attention on Boko Haram and on the plight of people in Nigeria's northeast. But little has improved in Chibok since April. Last November, the town was overrun and occupied briefly by Boko Haram before the military retook it. In interviews, the girls who escaped the kidnapping said they were motivated to continue their studies at AUN as a way to help Chibok. Per the American University's request, Voice of America is only identifying the girls by their first names. Grace, an aspiring doctor, says the underdevelopment of her community motivates her to continue her studies.
I really want to change the place because our road, we didn't have a good road for transport, and it makes difficult for us to come to a place. We really want to change our area.
Yana says one of the hardest parts of her studies was leaving her parents in Chibok.
It's difficult because every parent have their parental care for their children. But since because it is for our own good and progress, they have to leave me. And also, I do have to leave them because it's for our own achievements.
Yana hopes to eventually become a geologist or ecologist, but she knows her path will eventually take her back to Chibok. Chris Stein for VOA News, Yola.
The Robert F. Kennedy Center for Justice and Human Rights is calling on the United States to ban individuals responsible for corruption and human rights abuses in the Gambia from obtaining visas to the United States. In a Gambia human rights report released on Thursday, the group also called on the United States to investigate President Yahya Jammeh, his immediate family members, and senior Gambian government officials for misuse of public funds. Jeff Smith is Africa specialist at the Robert F. Kennedy Center for Justice and Human Rights. He said since seizing power in 1994, President Jammeh has made Gambia one of the most repressive countries in all of Africa. Smith said the situation has gotten worse since the December 30, 2014 failed attempted coup.
The finding of our report is that there's been a very troubling uptick of human rights abuses in the aftermath of a failed coup attempt in the West African nation of Gambia, which happened on December 30. Thereafter, we have found that upwards of 27 individuals believed to be family members and alleged associates of the coup plotters have been detained without charge and held incommunicado in Gambia's notoriously awful prison system. Putting this in the context, though, the report also documents over 15 years' worth of horrendous human rights abuses that have occurred under President Yahya Jammeh since he came to power via military coup himself in 1994.
What you are reporting on, many people will say this has been going on for a long time. Why did you now decide to put out this report?
You are correct. This has been going on for much too long. And the timing of the report, like I said, is, you know, during this ongoing and seemingly escalating crisis in the country. The December 30th failed coup attempt was the eighth such attempt in the past 20 years. So clearly to my mind, the status quo in the Gambia is unsustainable. And by releasing the report now, when we did, we're really urging the United States as well as the United Nations and the African Union to be more proactively involved in a clearly deteriorating human rights situation, which has been, you know, taking place, as you mentioned, over the past two decades, but has clearly risen to a level where the status quo is no longer acceptable.
What can the United States do?
The United States in particular can act by doing a number of things. Number one, they can provide travel restrictions for President Jammeh, his inner circle, and members of the military and security forces who have been complicit in ordered human rights abuses. This would include visa bans and travel restrictions. Secondly, the United States can explore the option of freezing President Jammeh's assets. As many people are aware, he owns a $3.5 million mansion here in the United States, not very far from Washington, D.C., and Potomac, Maryland. And third, I think the U.S. should review all foreign assistance to the Gambia, especially assistance relating to the military, which accounts for upwards of $1 million a year.
In reality, you are calling for some sort of sanctions against the Gambian government.
Absolutely. Action needs to be taken. As you mentioned in your introduction, we have allowed, and when I say we, I mean the international community, we have allowed this unbelievable repression to happen right underneath our noses for the past two decades, and the time has come to act and to do something. If you look at any independent monitoring of the situation in the Gambia, it regularly, on a yearly basis, registers as one of the worst of the worst in all of Africa. Jammeh's Gambia is routinely at the very bottom in terms of respect for human rights, in terms of good governance, which there is none, and in terms of basic fundamental respect for civil liberties and political rights that we are all entitled to as a matter of being human.
Jeff Smith is Africa Specialist at the Robert F. Kennedy Center for Justice and Human Rights. He was speaking with me in Washington. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voices of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Friday, February 6th. Please send your comments and opinions to Daybreak Africa at voanews.com. Daybreak Africa time is coming up at 17 and a half minutes past the hour. The World Health Organization says the window for controlling the Ebola outbreak in West Africa is narrowing. WHO says traveling within the three heavily affected countries, Liberia, Sierra Leone, and Guinea, will become extremely difficult in a couple of months when the rainy season begins. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from WHO headquarters in Geneva.
The World Health Organization reports good progress is being made toward containing the Ebola epidemic, but it warns the outbreak is far from over and still poses a grave threat. Special Envoy of the UN Secretary General David Nabarro urges people not to let down their guard and become complacent. Though cases of Ebola are declining, he says a great deal of hard work remains to get to zero cases and zero transmission. To prove this point, he notes WHO reported 124 new confirmed cases of Ebola this past week, an increase of 25 cases from the previous week.
There will always be volatility. Numbers will go up and down. But the more we're able to actively seek out cases and follow up their contacts, the better our results will be. Now, to finish the work off, it will be necessary to continue to bring in materials and people so that we can undertake the kind of detective work that is necessary to overcome the disease and also at the same time to get basic services back and working again.
But this takes money, and lots of it. Dr. Nabarro says the United Nations needs $1 billion to finish the job, and it needs it now.
Money now is worth so much more than money in a month or 2 months' time. And I think that's our anxiety, is trying to get the resources in as quickly as possible so we don't end up with interruptions. That's what's dangerous.
WHO Assistant Director General for Polio and Emergencies, Bruce Aylward, agrees. He warns the window of opportunity for getting control of the epidemic is narrowing, and hunting the virus out of existence will become extremely difficult when the rains start falling in a couple of months in West Africa.
Right now, our ability to fully exploit the window we have between today and the onset of the rains in April, May, is constrained by financing. There's absolutely no question about it. This crisis is different than so many of the crises that we're dealing with right now, because you have to get to zero. That's reality. It started with one case. It will end with one case. We have to get to zero.
The senior Ebola experts are urging people in Liberia, Sierra Leone, and Guinea to remain vigilant and not to revert to behaviors that can spread the virus. They say the disease is transmitted through bodily fluids, so people should refrain from touching each other a lot. They say unsafe burials are one of several practices that are still driving the epidemic. They say it is premature and indeed extremely dangerous for people to resume traditional ritual burial practices. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
South Sudan's information minister says President Salva Kiir's administration is against the release of the African Union Commission of Inquiry report on the conflict in South Sudan. Michael McQuay says the report on the atrocities committed in the country during the violence will block the progress made so far at the IGAD-mediated peace talks in Addis Ababa.
This document, even if it is released, what interest will it serve? Will it bring peace to South Sudan? The government believes that the best way is to keep the report, pursue peace. After reaching peace, then you come to issues of accountability. There is no way you would hold somebody to account at present at a time when we have not yet reached peace. That is actually a complicating factor. The so-called human rights organizations and watch and so forth are not serious, they are not genuine, they don't want peace for South Sudan. It is a complicating factor because, say, if Michael is tried today as indicted today, will he accept peace?
No.
There are already generals who are indicted. Are we after peace or are we after indicting and holding people accountable at a time when we have not yet reached peace?
Let me just use your word. You are saying that some generals are indicted. Who are these generals?
A general like the man of the rebels, that General Gadet is one of the generals who may be held accountable for whatever atrocity. Now, are we after peace or are we to make him accountable for what he has done?
There are other people who are arguing that there is no peace without justice. If you don't do justice to people who have been hurt in one way or another, peace will not prevail.
That is the wrong approach, because you first bring peace and thereafter make people accountable for justice, not the other way around. You cannot put the cart before the horse. These are people who are not interested in peace for South Sudan. They are interested in their own agendas.
Michael McQuay, South Sudan's information minister and government spokesman. He was speaking to John Tanza of VOA South Sudan in Focus program. Time now for Daybreak Africa Sports, and here is Mark Owuma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Good Friday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak Africa Sports News, we focus on the Orange African Cup of Nations in Equatorial Guinea. Goals scored by brothers Jordan and Andre Ayew, along with Mubarak Wakaso, propelled Ghana to a 3-0 triumph over Equatorial Guinea in semifinal action in the capital Malabo on Thursday. Wakaso's goal is the 1,500th goal in the Nations Cup history. However, play was halted in the 82nd minute when some frustrated home fans threw water bottles onto the pitch. Many Ghanaian fans sought protection behind one of the goalposts after missiles were thrown at them in the terrace. It took security officials over 20 minutes to restore order before the match resumed. The match commissioner, who is also the Nigeria Football Federation president, Amaju Pinnick, has this to say.
We witnessed what happened, indeed very contemptible. There is football fanaticism, but these are the kind of things we don't want to see in football. You know, football brings friendship and love and unity. That's what it preaches. It doesn't preach what we saw here today. It's quite condemnable. We'll look at it, and based on what happened, we're going to base our report on that, send to the appropriate quarters and see where they come out. I think the referee was fair, and then personally, I don't think there's anything wrong with the officiating. It was fair, it was very firm, and it was totally in control of the game.
That was Amaju Pinnick, the match commissioner for the Ghana-Equatorial Guinea semi-final, speaking in Malabo. Meanwhile, the Ghana Black Stars fought hard to earn their place in the finals. Black Stars winger Christian Atsu shares their experience.
This game was very difficult for Ghana. The fans were behind them. I think they had a lot of confidence. They came all out. When we came the first half, we spoke to each other that we have to leave the referee and the players and then concentrate more on the football. So I think we have learned a lot from this game. In the next game, we will correct our mistakes. So when the game stopped, we were talking to each other. We were really organized. No matter what happens, we were just focused on the game. I think we are very happy that at the end of the game, we won.
That was Christian Atsu, Ghana Black Stars winger, speaking in Malabo. Finally, the Democratic Republic of Congo encounters Equatorial Guinea in the bronze medal playoff in Malabo tomorrow, Saturday. Then Ghana and Ivory Coast clash in the finals in Bata on Sunday. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa, wishing you all a sporty weekend. Back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Mark. Have a good weekend. We'll see you again on Monday morning. It's time now for our Black History Month and African History Facts for today, February 6th. On this day in 1993, black tennis player Arthur Robert Ashe died of AIDS-related pneumonia in New York. Ashe was the first African-American tennis player to win at Wimbledon and the first African-American to win the U.S. Open. He also won the Australian Open in 1970 and was the number one ranked tennis player in the world in 1975. Because of his greatness as an American tennis champion and a fighter for the rights of all people, the U.S. Open Tennis Stadium in New York was named the Arthur Ashe Stadium. Also on this day in 1867, the Peabody Fund for Black Education in the southern states of the United States was established. Its main purpose was to support elementary education by strengthening existing schools. But because it was restricted from establishing new schools, it did not benefit free slaves in the South, as there were no established schools for blacks. On this day in 1961, the Jail In movement began in Rock Hill, South Carolina, when a group of African-American students refused to pay the usually huge fines and chose to go to jail instead. The Friendship Nine, as they are called, went to jail after staging a sit-in at a segregated lunch counter in Rock Hill, South Carolina. In 2015, Judge John C. Hayes III of Rock Hill overturned the convictions of the Nine, stating, "We cannot rewrite history, but we can write history." On this day in 1820, the first organized immigration of U.S. blacks back to Africa began. About 86 free African-American slaves left New York Harbor aboard the Mayflower of Liberia. They were going to the British colony of Sierra Leone, which had opened its borders to free African-Americans as well as fugitive slaves. Also on this day in 1945, Jamaican reggae singer and songwriter Bob Marley was born. He became the first global pop singer to come from a developing nation. Those are your Black History Month and African History Facts for today, February 6th. Congratulations to Jaden Siwale of Kitwe, Zambia, and Evelyn Sono of Bulawayo, Zimbabwe. You are the winners of our February 5th question, who is considered the mother of the modern civil rights movement in the United States. The answer, Rosa Macaulay Parks, for her refusal to give up her black assigned seat to a white man. Now here is our question for today, February 6th. Who is considered baseball's all-time home run hitter? Once again, who is considered baseball's all-time home run hitter? Send your answers to DaybreakAfrica at voanews.com. Remember to include your mailing address. And that's it for this Friday, February 6th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending this week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Shryak, as well as sports editor Mark Oman, along with our engineer Jim Harmon, I'm Jim Butte saying, have a lovely weekend, Africa.
Hello, this is Sunday Shomari. Join me every Monday for your lighthearted show, Let's Talk. That's right, Monday at 17:30 UTC for interviews, great music, and a whole lot of laughter. Right here at the VOA Africa. Keep it locked, VOA Africa, don't miss.
Hello, sports fans. This is Sonny Young of the Sunny Side of Sports. Please join me Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC. And on Fridays, you can also hear my 30-minute show at 17:30 UTC. On the internet, like me on Facebook, follow me on Twitter, and read my blog. Check voaafrica.com for the addresses and enjoy the show.